Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Sheila Jordan to the broadcast. Sheila is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Symantec, a $4 billion security and information management software company. She's responsible for driving Symantec's IT strategy and operations, and also oversees Symantec's Global Security Office. Prior to Symantec, Sheila was the Senior Vice President of Communication and Collaboration IT at Cisco Systems. She also worked at Walt Disney World as the Senior Vice President of Destination Disney. Sheila serves on the board of directors of FactSet, a $1.2 billion global company that delivers insight and information to investment professionals. Sheila holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in accounting from the University of Central Florida and an MBA from the Florida Institute of Technology. I recently caught up with Sheila in her office in Mountain View, California, and our conversation covered world-class IT principle one, people, as Sheila discussed how she rebuilt the IT team at Symantec, how she integrates new employees from acquired companies, and how she develops an agile team to meet shifting priorities and opportunities. We also covered principle four, IT and business partnerships, as Sheila described how her IT department's horizontal integration throughout the business allows IT to run more effectively, to serve as a connector through the organization, and enables business success. We also discussed Symantec's integrated cyber defense platform, women in technology, and how broadening your definition of innovation can spur innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you'd give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal, an exclusive network of the top freelance software developers, designers, and finance experts in the world. I recently caught up with TopTal CEO Tasso Duval, and he offered the following top five trends for hiring top talent.
The top five trends for hiring top talent are, one, hiring talent remotely, ensuring that they are able to work remotely and that companies are hiring talent remotely. Two, leveraging teams in different dispersed locations. If you're hiring in-house and you're leveraging remotely a bit, being open to having talent even in the same time zone is an important factor that we've noticed. Three, highly skilled teams becoming the majority rather than the lead, meaning ensuring that the team composition comprises of predominantly high-skilled labor rather than high-skilled labor supported by lower-skilled labor. Four, infrastructure being created to support those teams, ensuring that the teams in-house are connected with the remote teams that are working together. And five, flexibility with offer packages. We've seen that even the in-house talent that are joining companies from Google to Facebook and on are interested in demanding that there is a remote component to their job, whether it's one day a week or full time, be included within their offer packages.
Sheila, Symantec recently acquired Bluecoat in LifeLock. What advantages was Symantec trying to gain for the enterprise, your partners, your customers through these acquisitions?
With the Bluecoat acquisition, we were able to get our CEO, Greg Clark, and Mike Fay, who's our president and COO. And so they came in and quickly established what I call the vision for the company and the overall strategy for the company, which is what we're calling this integrated cyber defense platform or vision. And the reason I think that's so important for CIOs and CISOs to think about is because it really is the integration of what historically has been, when you think about security, it has historically been a fragmented point solutions, lots of players in the marketplace. And quite honestly, fragmentation and lack of integration cause even a greater risk for CIOs and CISOs because the bad guys will hang out in those, what I call those white spaces, and cause some potential damage. So the opportunity is to improve the security posture of all of our customers, you know, and that's across small, medium, and enterprise. And also, we really want to make sure that we're providing some operational efficiencies and really reducing the cost, because you have this technology sprawl inside a company, and you could take some of those products out and have an integrated solution that drives a lot of value to CISOs and to our customers. Most of this will be implemented both on cloud products, so security as a cloud product, as well as on-prem. And it's really resonating with our customers. We just had our earnings report. It's just really, really resonating across almost every vertical and across, again, small, medium, and enterprise. From an IT perspective, we want to make sure that we're both enabling the organization. And I think it's really important that CIOs think about both the run and enable. You have to run the company and be efficient and effective, and that's kind of table stakes. But you also in a position now with the new technology in general to be able to help the CEO and the C-suites to change and grow. And so when we have an opportunity like we did with the integrations of both LifeLock and Blue Coat, we have the opportunities to really not only integrate and kind of put the companies together, but really transform how we do our work and really think about the future and where is it going. So the combination of us moving to cloud products, the combination of having a stake in the driving of the integration and transformation allowed us to really think about taking this global subscription platform to kind of a new level. One of the things we thought about is not only are we going to have cloud products, but how do we make sure our consumers and our customers can consume the products the way they want to? So we created this end-to-end reference architecture for our global subscription platform, which really is end-to-end. And what I mean end-to-end, it means it starts with our engineering products, and they have provisioning and metering and monitoring in the cloud products. And that goes all the way through how we quote an order, configure an order, how we do all that quote to cash, all the way through all those systems. And then ultimately, we think about all of our distribution. So we want to be widely distributed, and based upon the customer choice, they're ordering our products, and that all hits the global subscription platform, and it's processed what I call almost frictionless. What we want to do is to create that few clicks process, and you know, we can actually make it simple and frictionless. And so we're doing that with the combination of our cloud products and the integration of those products with the subscription platform allows us to do that.
That's really great. And your clients are often IT departments. You run the IT department here. To what extent do you and your team spend time in the field working with CIOs and sort of gleaning from them their issues or that you can help resolve?
I think you know the CIO community is pretty connected.
Indeed.
We encounter any challenges across our space. And if we're thinking about, say, going to public cloud, we reach out to each other and find out who's doing what. So it's a very connected community in the Valley and even outside the Valley. So a couple things. One is I do a lot of executive briefings with our customers. They love to hear about what we're doing internally, how we're securing Symantec. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? I work very, very closely with our CISO. But I would say in general, there's all sorts of things that we talk amongst the CIO community about. So mm-hmm. we have those conversations all the time.
Yep.
So it's just a tight-knit group, as I think you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then likewise, to what extent are you a customer of Symantec?
Very much so. Yeah. So I often communicate to our engineering organization that we're the Petri dish. You know,
right.
We want to make sure that, you know, we have this program called Customer One, that we are, in fact, Customer One.
Uh-huh.
So we have an opportunity to test the products in early stages. So alpha and then beta. And then give that feedback, this iterative feedback to the product teams. And then, of course, when it goes into production, we actually give even some more information as we actually integrate it, what we're seeing, what we're learning. And it's just a constant communication across the product. One of the things we've done is on our Customer One initiative, we actually document our deployment of our products. We have white papers all over our Symantec.com that showcase lessons learned, the documents, what we learned, what deployments, tips and tricks on almost all of our deployments of security products. We want our sales team to use that to go to their customers and say, this is how Symantec deployed, you know, whatever product that is.
Yeah. That's really wonderful.
Yeah.
It gives you an opportunity to kind of stake your own claim, to offer feedback on what's working, what's not.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we work, again, very closely with the CISO to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, that's really great. As someone who was in IT in multiple organizations prior to this one, Walt Disney, Cisco, to what extent did you have a perspective on Symantec when you came in here? Like, what was your perspective on Symantec before arriving as a potential customer of it and that sort of thing before actually then taking on a leadership?
Well, I was really excited. It was, as you know, I think we've talked before, as you know, it was a pretty hard decision to leave Cisco. I think it was one of the hardest professional decisions I made, but it was an opportunity to, one, become the CIO, but also where the security footprint was moving and where the security technology was moving. But also just the opportunity to really come in and help the organization at that point. They had outsourced a lot of the IT. And so it was an opportunity to really, I was hired to kind of insource IT. So I thought that would be an interesting and cool experience to go through. And then simultaneously, and you know, what the promise has always been is that we're going to be the largest cybersecurity company in the world. And we're there now. So the reality is we've become that. It's been a lot of work, but between insourcing and then making decisions to do a divestiture, so the Veritas divestiture and making multiple decisions on M&A around acquisitions, we're becoming that pure play cybersecurity company that's going to end up offering end-to-end solutions that no other company can.
Yeah. And given the fact that, I mean, the size of the divestiture, the size of the acquisition coming from an organization in Cisco that is also extraordinarily acquisitive, have you developed sort of a playbook as to what to do from an IT perspective in either of those scenarios, divestiture and acquisition?
Both, actually. And I would say I'm really quite proud of the IT team here because one of the things when we insourced, we had to stand up a whole new IT organization. You always want to create best of class, you know, IT team. And I think we have, quite honestly. we can actually absorb a lot of the companies that we're doing in a fashion that allows us to think about systems of integration, which is around the engagement, how the collaboration tools and how we're doing around systems of engagement. But then we have an opportunity to step back and say, how do we want to change the processes? So again, it's not just integration, but the company has really been leading a transformation of how do we want to simplify and reduce complexity and transform how we do work. And we start thinking about the number of product SKUs we had. We start thinking about the channels and distribution and, you know, all of those things had gotten a bit complex. So we want to make sure that this is an opportunity to not just integrate, but how we really transform the business in a much more simpler, more agile, more speed go-to-market that we can. And this is the opportunity that we can do that when you actually acquire these two companies. And we've done that both on the enterprise security side with Blue Coat, and we're in the process of doing that with the LifeLock integration on the consumer side.
It's also interesting the interplay between B2C and B2B. You know, there are a lot of organizations that are like your prior one that are primarily one versus the other, whereas you span each of those.
Right.
Thankfully, I think most B2Bs recognize that the other B are humans rather than buildings, right? You know? And so it's important to actually bear in mind what works even in the consumer space, even if you are a business-to-business organization. How does the learning happen across the fulcrum from B2B to B2C? How do those two sort of work together?
Biggest opportunity I think we have, and the thing we think about a lot, is our customers are also consumers.
Yeah.
So our customers from an enterprise security standpoint are also consumers. So where we can think about how the integrated cyber defense platform is the solution for enterprise security, B2B, our digital safety platform is the solution as we bring LifeLock and Norton together for consumers. And so we have a real opportunity as we're selling to enterprises, companies, in those enterprise companies, like here, there's a bunch of employees and consumers that we can actually showcase and offer potentially the digital security solution to.
Yeah.
So we're quite excited about that nurturing ability as we cross between consumer and business.
That's so interesting. You talked about building a team, and you've been the 3.5 years roughly that you've been here. Were there any reorganizations of IT? Did you rethink who reported to you and how, or the kinds of skills that you wanted to bring in?
First thing, and again, trying to insource an IT organization was really quite challenging to begin with, because I think the state of affairs of the outsource or hadn't gotten to it, it became pretty much inefficient and ineffective.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say that a lot of the business went around IT to get work done. There's a lot of shadow IT. So one, the first thing you have to do, I think you have to decide, is what is your leadership team and what does that look like? And who do you want to stay? Who do you want to promote? Who do you want to recruit? So I think it's a really important decision to make, is the leadership team and what talents you need to bring in based upon where you are in that situation. And then I think then it just continues on as they go out and hire and they go out and recruit and maybe you build a team across the globe. And again, we're about 50-50 approximately between Mountain View and US. And then we have a big team in Pune, India. So we're really quite excited about the growth there and the quality of work from our Pune team members and employees. It just takes time. So one is begin to decide that, and then of course match with the business priorities. And then I would say that it's not once and done. I think the most interesting part, if I could give some advice, is that, you know, once you've got your team in place to solve what you have to, and everything is moving so fast these days, that solving for the next 12 months is one thing. And then the next 12 months, usually there's a very different priority and a very different focus, which requires different skills. And then the following 12 months is something else. So I think you have to really constantly be real agile with your team and make leadership movements. I'm a big believer in, we have a services owner-led organization. And what I mean by that is most leaders own a service end-to-end. So whether that's the video or WebEx service, or whether that's the pricing service or the quote to cash service, they own that end to end, both on run, grow, and change. If there's a problem with that service, then that service owner has to go solve it. And we're also looking to optimize our costs. We're also looking to optimize the cost of that service, the delivery of that service each and every year. So having a services-led organization really gives the employees empowerment, like a general manager of that service. It gives them that empowerment. It gives them that breath, the ability to kind of run that service how they need to. And we go through service reviews once a quarter. But I would say that it's really important to make sure that the talent and the team that you have matches to where the business wants to go. Part of our business went into public cloud. So when you think about that, you've got to really adjust the skill sets you have, you know, because you always have some legacy, but you adjust the skills that you have, and then you have to augment that with the skills that you need.
You've mentioned a couple times, for good reason, the insourcing. And I think this is a really interesting trend that a lot of organizations, that was seen as kind of a big gift, potentially. In fact, there was a big debate in a lot of organizations as to how much of IT should we really have inside. And so a lot of organizations started to cut with a machete as opposed to a scalpel and recognize that they've pushed too much outside, even some aspects that were strategic. And a lot of organizations like this one have begun to pull things back in as a result of that and sort of correcting some of those decisions. Can you typify the sorts of things you mentioned, for instance, making sure that you're building an organization that's sort of where the company itself is going so that you're supporting that? How else have you thought about what to continue to engage external parties with versus those things that you do yourselves?
Yeah, so I think it's always a balance between what's a core competency and what you can choose to augment and what you can choose to have others do. Mm-hmm. And I think this, we go through that discussion and decision all the time. So there's all sorts of aspects that we've allowed that, you know, we're not never going to be great at a call center. We're just not going to be on the service desk and things like that. So why wouldn't we want to go take advantage of a company that is doing that really well? So I think it's a constant balance between what's your core competency and what you want to build versus what you want to outsource. The interesting part, though, that I would say, though, is that everything has changed in the IT world in the last 5 years on how you actually deliver IT services. I mean, if you go back 5 or 7 years ago, it was really contained within the four walls. There was physical data centers, monolithic applications. I mean, it was kind of controlled and within the four walls. And now today with IoT, with mobile, with cloud, with SaaS, with public cloud, the job is still the same. Our job is to help the business run, change, and grow and enable the business. But it's in a very different way and mechanisms with everything changing with IoT and inside and outside the firewall and public cloud. So the mechanisms of how we have to do our jobs have radically changed. So again, with that, you have to think about what then becomes IT. And recently I was, you know, talking to a lot of external leaders, and you know, one guy from an airline said, you know, I'm not the CEO of an airline. I'm the CEO of a technology company with wings, because every industry, whether it's airlines or pharmaceuticals or retail, it really is become so, and I hate to use the word, but it's overused, but digital, you know, it really has become digital, where IT isn't just back office. It isn't just run. Of course you have to do that part of it, but where IT adds value is in change and grow. So I would just say that the whole expectation of IT has radically changed. The technology has allowed us to do our jobs very differently. We're not just run, we have to participate and change and grow. And the technology has allowed us to do that in ways that didn't exist before.
I know from our past conversations that you also see a big role for IT in remaining abreast of technology trends. Mm-hmm. So what new technology is going to impact the organization and be in some ways that translator for others in the organization who no doubt are themselves have some perspectives on that. What are the ways in which you stay current? And likewise, I'd love to hear about maybe some trends that are particularly exciting to you right now.
Yeah, so staying current, I'd be remiss if I didn't say it wasn't a challenge. It is. But I do think sitting in Silicon Valley helps a lot, you know, with your events, with some of the other VC events that we get invited to all the time. You know, we can weigh in on new technologies, and we do a lot. But I think it's not just what's interesting. I really go back to and say, what are we trying to solve? And what's the business problem we're trying to solve? Like, for example, one of the things I think is so fascinating, I know we use this a lot in our products, but I do think, and I also think it could be overused, is AI and machine learning. I mean, I really think AI applied to what typically has been transactional data, and we can provide more insights and predictive insights to the business, is something that I think is a big trend that we're all going to start working on. I'm not a fan of technology for the sake of technology. I am a fan of what is out there that's going to help our business run more efficiently and or help them change and grow.
Mm-hmm. How do you work with the rest of the organization to understand where they see the business going? Like, how well articulated are plans around the organization? How does your team integrate into the different parts of the organization, the different divisions of the company, say, in order to remain abreast of where they see the landscape?
Well, the good news is that because of the whole company is, and this was the same way when we did the divestiture of Veritas, because when the whole company's focused on this large of a transformation, we have the structure in place. That's our program council and then the program board. And we have a real, and again, it's real end to end. So everyone is in the room, whether that's on the engineering side, our go-to-market side, everyone's in the room. And we're making sure that as we think about our major releases that we're delivering this new functionality and transformation, that in those releases, there's 22 different functions that are touched in each release. So we're getting all those requirements. We're figuring out how we streamline those requirements across the 22 functions and then how we deliver that into each of the releases. So we're continuing to do that transformation. Because of the focus on transformation and integration, it's easier than I think it would be if it was just status quo. So I think that's easier. The other thing is, I think it's really important, like on our subscription platform, again, it's end to end. And we have a biweekly subscription steering committee on what's happening on the platform, what's happening on go-to-market, what's happening, what the whole plan is, what's the revenue it's producing. So there's a whole business update on it, as well as what the technology is needed to continue in driving that. We have our monthly operations review. So there's a lot of opportunities to connect with the business, which is really critical. One of the reasons why it's been as successful as we have is because we have this close business partnership with the business. And I'm not just saying that to be cliche. I really mean the business is right with us, and they're designing the business process. They're designing what they want to do differently. They're really clear about their requirements. They're really clear about what's a priority right now and what we can wait for. And that level of partnership and that level of we're in this together, we can't do everything all at once. But having that partnership that really allows you to take the vision and chunk, lack of a technical term, but chunk it up into what's a manageable piece, and we're not changing every function of every company every month, but we're really kind of spreading that out in a real strategic vision, has been a real learning as we go through this kind of transformation. One of the things I love about IT is that we see horizontally. We're one of the few functions of the company that can see horizontally. And so what that comes is that we can see upstream and downstream. We can see where there's redundancies and where there's gaps. And we're a connector, so we can help connect that view across the company.
And thus the logic, I assume, aligning yourself to services that you described before, so you can make those efficient across the organization.
Right. And again, because not only is it the service, but we even have, you know, we have a help desk and trouble tickets and problem tickets. We've even attached segmentation of those tickets to the specific service. Because guess what? If you're a service owner and you're having problems with your service, you got to know how many tickets are being justified because of that service isn't working quite well. So it's not just the development aspects of it. It's making sure that we're delivering the most efficient, optimal service we can across 120 different services.
I'd also be remiss not to ask for the State of the Union of Women in Technology. Mm-hmm. You're a female CIO of very strong reputation. You worked with another one at Cisco and Rebecca Jacoby, among others, I'm sure. And I'd be curious just sort of how you've thought about the process of continuing to pay forward the path that you've created.
First of all, I'm sad that we haven't seemed to really crack the percentage. It still hovers at a fairly low percentage of women in technology, around the high 20s. No matter how much work we're doing, we can't seem to break that barrier, which makes me unhappy a bit. But I also think, though, that we have to continue paying it forward. And we have to, those that are in the positions, and there's a lot of us that are in the Valley, and I just think we have to continue paying it forward. Mm-hmm. And so I'm involved in STEM. I'm the executive sponsor for our SWAN, Semantic Women's Action Network, here. So I just think it's really important that we provide the role model, but also that we're paving the way and paying it forward for the youth, millennials. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of internship program here. I try and make it as balanced as I can. So we just really are trying to make sure that we're continuing the conversation and continuing to drive that path forward.
One of the things I think is really a conundrum of the modern CIO is, on the one hand, to have responsibility for driving or at least participating in innovation, which is about risk taking, while also bearing in mind security, which is about risk mitigation. Right. And so you've got sort of a balance that you need to strike as a CIO. If either of those outweighs the other to too great a degree, that can obviously bring a whole set of risks associated with it. And I'd be curious, especially as somebody who's done many innovative things, but also sits now in a security company on top of that, how do you think about sort of getting that balance correct?
I guess I would say I don't think of them as mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when people say innovation, they think product innovation or just R&D. And I actually think innovation can occur in every pocket of the organization. I mean, whether it's about transforming a go-to-market process, whether it's about changing your strategy with our channels, whether it's about changing how you do quote to cash or record to report your financials. I mean, there are so many opportunities that any individual in the company can think about innovation. Now, having said that, I actually think when you think about the layers of security needed now, bad guys are smarter, they're staying longer, and they're more targeted. So as things are changing and as the IT landscape is changing, as I mentioned earlier, with more SaaS, more public cloud, more IoT, more mobile, we got to think about security differently and layers of security, which is, again, I think why this integrated cyber defense platform is so important, because it will offer those layers of security across the entire network and architecture. So what I mean by that is you're going to have security products at the network layer, the data layer, encryption, endpoint, all the way up and down the architecture. And when that becomes more integrated, our security posture will increase, because I'm not trying to manage those white spaces. So it's really important that, again, what Semantic, the company, is doing in the vision, but seeing that into practice and seeing that how we leverage that and deploy that inside the organization, we're seeing benefits from that.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Please join us next week when my guest will be Bill Graff, the Chief Information Officer of Cerner Corporation, a $4.8 billion healthcare information technology solutions company. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.